Hey everybody, this is Steve.
And Cassidy.
And you're listening to At Home in North Iowa.
We're realtors with Century 21 Preferred, offering you modern real estate solutions.
So super, I know I say this a lot. I'm super excited. I am really excited for all of you listeners to listen to Bridget Wagner, who is the curriculum director for Mason City Schools.
Yeah, so I think this is a very important podcast that I'm very glad that we did. It was super informative. I think that I'll just kind of jump right into it. I posted on Facebook if anybody had any questions that they would have for Mason City School District as far as that goes to reach out to me. And I had a lot of people, some people post, a lot of people message me or text me or Snapchat me questions that they had for Bridget. And those were really hard hitting questions. Some of them I told her they might be sensitive, but most of them we got answered. I personally went to a smaller school. Now I live in Mason City, and it's kind of intimidating thinking about sending my kids to Mason City School District now. I feel like I went to a smaller school. The option to get into supports was like, you know, no brainer. If your kid wanted to play, there was no trying out. You got on the team, you were pretty much guaranteed some sort of playing time, you know, on that team. And I just feel like you got more like one-on-one with like the coaches and stuff when you were playing too, because the teams were not as big and stuff. So sports is a big concern of mine when it comes to my kids. Who knows? Maybe they won't play sports, but I'm just thinking future-wise. Another thing was classroom sizes, which we kind of hit on in this podcast. So
you'll be surprised on the classroom sizes.
Yeah, you really will. Yeah. Another thing is just, I don't know, just how big the school is, like the transfer from elementary to Lincoln Intermediate to John Adams to the high school. I mean, there's a lot of like movement of the kids, you know, whereas like you have a K through 12 almost, and it's like, you're just, that's where you are, you know, the whole time.
So I have, you know, so I graduated from Mason City. I have two kids at Mason City High School. They'll be going, I'll have a sophomore and a senior. And, you know, there's a lot of positives to a big school. Growing up in one, you get to find your clique. You know, if you're not a sports person, there are plenty of other opportunities for your kids to get involved in schools or in activities within the school. I think from an education standpoint, all teachers care. I mean, that's why they're teachers.
But yeah.
I think that Mason City does a very, very good job of seeing kids that are either high functioning or need extra help, and they make a solid path for them to go forward. So I'm very pro Mason City Schools, and I think that you learn a lot of life lessons that that you can take into the real world as an adult when you have a graduating class of 400 people, because you have to learn diversity and how to handle different. When I say diversity, I'm not necessarily saying like skin color. I am saying differing opinions, political views,
just wealth.
Yeah. Yeah. The economic demographics, yeah. You know, and the younger that you learn that, I think the better off you're going to be as a good human being, as an adult. And yeah. We talked a little bit about, so when I was in school, we had middle schools all the way up until eighth grade. And then we all went to high school, in ninth grade, right? But those two schools weren't merged until ninth grade. And I think this the way it is now with our intermediate and then to John Adams and then to the high school, it brings them together sooner. So there's less separation in high school. And I think it's a pro move from Mason City's standpoint. So yeah, I think there's a lot of good things. This podcast is great.
And yeah, a lot of like really hard questions were answered. Very informative. She's a really good speaker. Bridget has a lot of background in education and with schools. I feel like she's really a great person to listen to. And she's a big cheerleader for Mason City School District, sure. Which is really great.
For sure. So enjoy it. This is one that I would really encourage your kids to listen to, especially if you have a high school kid, because she touches on a lot of stuff that would be good for your kids to listen to. So yeah. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey, listeners, thanks for joining us. We're super excited to have Bridget Wagner with the Mason City School District with us today. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we kind of like to start our podcast off with talking about where you're from. And are you from the North Iowa area?
I am not. So I grew up in Waterloo, and then I lived in Cedar Falls for 11 years. I worked at the University of Northern Iowa. From there, I lived in Waverly for 11 years, and I moved here a year ago yesterday from Waverly.
So you're
happy
just
anniversary.
Yeah, thanks.
So you'll be up to Minnesota pretty soon. You're just gradually right. making your way north, it seems like.
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to get any farther north than this.
So tell us a little bit about your position with the Mason City Schools.
Sure. So I am the Director of Curriculum and Instruction. Actually, July 1st, we'll be making a transition to Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction. And basically, I oversee the whole education program for the district to make sure that what we're providing in terms of programming, in terms of instructional quality, is meeting the needs of our students and meeting the needs of our community.
So how did you get to become a Director of Curriculum?
Yeah, I don't even know. So I was an English teacher, taught high school English for 8 years at the lab school at UNI. Absolutely loved being a high school English teacher. Never thought I would leave my classroom. But inevitably, you find opportunities to step into those. So I became an administrator when I was still at the lab school, eventually was the director of that school. Wanted to get into a school district rather than just a lab school. So made the move there into a very similar role at the Waverly-Shell Rock District. I did a lot of statewide and national kind of work related to curriculum and standards and things like that. So the central office curriculum and instruction role was kind of a natural fit for me. I've never been a principal, and that's kind of a strange route to take into administration, but always been in the central office, always kind of done the oversight in that way.
So you cover all of the Mason City School District. So that would include which schools?
So yeah, all of them, all four elementary buildings, Harding, Hoover, Roosevelt, Jefferson, Lincoln Intermediate, John Adams Middle School, Mason City High School, Pinecrest Center, and Mason City Alternative School, and the Mason City Virtual Academy.
So you're busy.
Yeah. There's no shortage of good work to be done. That's true.
Okay. So could you tell us something unique to each school individually?
Yeah. So because it's my first year, I just rounded out 1 year. I really made a concerted effort to be in our schools this year. And I'm going to continue that. I'm in every school every week, walking through buildings, walking through classrooms. And I do feel like I've gotten a really good sense of what makes each of our buildings special. So at the elementary level, I think people kind of have some preconceived notions about what each school is all about. But they're all phenomenal. Actually, we just did a series of focus groups probably about a month ago, and we had the opportunity to talk to kids in every building, to talk to parents, teachers, support staff. It was a phenomenal learning opportunity for me. And so I'll probably connect to some of those things as I kind of walk through each building for you. I'll start with Roosevelt because it's the closest to my office. And when we talk to kids there, our lead-in question was always like, tell me how you feel about school. And the first little boy sitting there, these were second, third, and fourth graders. And he said, it just feels like home. And it made me so happy. I thought, man, if school could feel like home for every kid. Because quite honestly, once your kids are in school, we spend more time with them than you do, you know?
Yeah.
And he said things like, it's a place where we can go and make mistakes and learn from them. And it's okay to make mistakes.
That's huge for such a little human.
A second grader. So Roosevelt is unique. It's one of our largest buildings, has one of our largest low socioeconomic populations, one of our largest ELL populations, but at the same time, one of our highest, well, it probably is our highest achieving school in math. So phenomenal things happening in all of our buildings. And I like to point out that we take all kids, we meet them where they are, and move them into really good places. When I think about the conversations that we had at Hoover Elementary, Hoover is unique in that it's the building that serves our kids who have the greatest behavior challenges. Some of those kids come to us with backgrounds that are pretty traumatic, And because of that, they struggle to regulate their emotions, regulate their behavior sometimes. And I think parents know that, right? The community knows that these mm-hmm. things happen in schools throughout the country, but certainly here in the Mason City School District, because we are the largest district in the area. So we not only take our kids who live here, but we take kids from a lot of other districts that don't feel like they have the resources to really educate some of those more challenging kids. So what the kids told us there that really warmed my heart as I was heading to lunch that morning, they said, first of all, we know that there are some kids who've had really hard lives in our school, and that we know that our adults are taking care of them and that they're taking care of us and that they always know what to do no matter what's happening. Our teachers and the adults here have us and they have things under control. And then they went on to express an incredible amount of empathy. Like I was really.
And these are second, third, and fourth
yeah.
graders.
Isn't that just, that's, yeah. It's it like that gives hits me you goosebumps. Yeah. Yes.
Sweethearts. But really they could identify, you know, that some gratitude that their own life experiences have been pretty good and that that has set them on a path that is probably, you know, in a better position than some other kids. And I think that's one of the benefits of being in a large, diverse school district, that kids learn that not everybody looks like you, sounds like you, acts like you. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we're all, you know, human and have innate value because of our humanity. So Hoover kids taught me that morning.
Yeah, that's awesome.
When we got over to Jefferson, it very similar. So kids there really talked. Jefferson has our SUN program, which would be our students who have significant physical disabilities or significant intellectual disabilities. And the same thing, they talked about how we have a lot of different kids in our school and we all take care of each other and nobody is going to pick on anybody and nobody's going to exclude anybody because here at Jefferson, we're family and we all take care of each other. And I love that too. When I got over to Harding, it was just like, we are a family and everybody here knows me. Harding is our smallest school. And it was just this really close-knit kind of family atmosphere there. Kids all know each other. Teachers all know each other. The kids and teachers all know each other. Kids expressed that they felt like they could go to any adult if they needed something. And I got to put a little plug in. Harding saw phenomenal reading growth this year. So I'm always going to probably take it back to some academic stuff as well. But really met kids who came to us really below where we often see kids and made tremendous gains over the course of the school year. So I have a tremendous amount of confidence in what we're doing, both, you know, socially and emotionally with our kids, but also what we're doing academically.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I can move on up too. We've got Lincoln John Adams High School, but I could talk, this could take the whole hour.
You should tell us a little bit about, so you go to your schools based on where you're living.
Yes.
And then Lincoln Intermediate, they all kind of come together at that point. Right.
Can I ask a quick question on that? Yeah. So I graduated from Mason City in 99. So awesome. I went, my elementary school is no longer there. It was Madison Elementary.
Okay, it's about to be a series of Habitat for Humanities houses.
Yeah, that's going to be, what a great way to repurpose that land. We were in middle school until ninth grade. So there was two, there was John Adams and then there was Roosevelt Middle School. Yeah. At some point, I think I was living in Rochester, Minnesota when it became an intermediate. I can see one good point is because once we got to high school, the John Adams kids and the Roosevelt kids, we didn't hang out together because the Roosevelt kids, we'd all been together our entire lives. Is integrating them earlier, is that kind of the goal or what's the theory behind an intermediate?
Right. So obviously all of those decisions happened before I got here, but I have a pretty good sense of I think what happened. So first and foremost, I think there's a recognition that there is a really big difference between us, you know, what a sixth grader's development is like and what an eighth grader's development is like. And so there was a desire to put kids into smaller groups, to group five and six together because they're more developmentally similar, and then to take 7, 8 and group them together for the same reason. The district I came from has a 5-8 middle school, and there is a gigantic difference between a fifth grader and an eighth grader.
Yeah,
still works, but just, you know, that sort of middle of the road development period from 10 to like 14, 15 is really dynamic. So I know that there was an effort to try to narrow those groups a little bit. I've heard pretty positive things about bringing kids together at a younger age for the same reason that you just articulated, you know, meeting kids from all over, forging those friendships and getting to know a wider group of students earlier on. At the same time, I think we are asking some questions about whether fifth grade is too young to move kids all into one building. When we were doing our focus groups, I specifically asked the fourth graders, talk to me about going to Lincoln. Like, how are you feeling about that? Are you scared? Are you excited? And interestingly enough, the thing that they were scared about is opening the lockers. Oh, you know? Sure. They don't have the finger dexterity for it in some sense, but they were extremely excited about being able to meet more friends and be with kids that they've known, you know, through little league teams or through church groups or in other places. So, you know, I think that the jury's still out on whether it's the right move to make, because it is a really hard transition for kids. Mm-hmm. We see it in terms of behavior at the beginning of the year. We see it academically, you know, and kids do recover from those things. And it's likely that we're going to see that dip wherever the transition is. But we are still asking some questions about whether fifth grade is the right place or whether, you know, there would be some better organizations to that. So comprehensive school, lots of programs like that. Great, like greenhouse programs, some cool STEM initiatives, great arts, of course, because we do arts really well around here. But no, comprehensive fifth and sixth grade school.
One thing that I think that we could touch on is just kind of following the recent school incident that made headlines nationally. Can you speak on steps that Mason City School District takes to ensure the safety of the children?
Yeah. You know, I think all of us, this weighs heavily on all of us. And it was something that came up in every single focus group with students as well. When we asked them, do you feel safe at school? Our younger kids said things like, well, I know that if there's a fire, like we know what to do. If there's a tornado, I'm probably safer at home because there's a basement, but my teachers know what to do. But they all said, I am scared that if somebody wants to come in here and shoot at us, that they could do that.
That's awful.
I know, it broke my heart. And, you know, at the end of the day, what our little kids just want to know that the adults know what to do and the adults have it under control. So we've done a lot of, you know, a range of things from like ALICE training with all of our staff. There's really been a change in the tenor of what is the best way to talk about things like school shootings with kids. Because on one hand, like, it is scary to talk about. But when I did hear from our kids that they're already thinking about it, that tells me, like, we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
We absolutely have to. Like, we're not telling them something that they don't know. Yeah. We're not making them scared of something that they aren't already scared of. So, you know, one of the things that I love about this community is that everybody's just all in around here. So I was actually at the gym this morning at 5 a.m. and I meet like Chief Brinkley walking in and mm-hmm. he's yeah. like, hey, can we talk shop for a minute? So the governor actually just announced yesterday that she's setting aside some funds specifically for schools to make some upgrades to buildings, which will really benefit us. What I read just in the press release is $50,000 per building. So that's a lot of money that will head our way to do some upgrades. And the immediate conversation with Chief was, you know what, we're doing some things in the city that I think would be really great to partner and do with the school district as well.
Yeah.
Specifically talking about some early detection kind of things. If you follow the city council meetings at all, you've probably heard some of the plans they have for downtown that are related to early detection and some technology that helps to scan the area and see who's there, that helps, you know, investigations happen more quickly, but also some things that can pretty quickly stop somebody who might come into a building without having to arm teachers, because I don't want our teachers carrying guns around, right?
Yeah.
That's not the good solution, in my opinion. But there are some ways that we can leverage technology, too, that I think are going to be really useful. And at the end of the day, it's in our best interest to work with Mason City PD, because if something happens, that's who we're going to call.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be on the same page. And I just want our community to know that we are on the same page. We have a tremendous amount of trust in our local police department. They're great partners for us, and that we're gonna take another look at where our safety is and what we can do. If you've tried to get into a building lately, you probably know it's difficult. Everything is locked, and you've got to be buzzed in, you know. But I think we all recognize that somebody who's really determined to get into a place is probably can find a way. So. We're going
to
do more.
Somebody that's determined to get a gun is probably going to get a gun.
Absolutely.
Just making it harder for them to get it, I think, would be awesome, you know?
Yeah. Is there are still resource officers in the schools?
So we don't have a dedicated school resource officer anymore. We just hired two new positions. They're called juvenile court school liaisons, and they're kind of an intermediary. So they actually are, and our goal with those two positions is to work on like diversion programs so that if kids do things at school or even outside of school that could result in criminal charges, that we're working with them on the front end of that. And I mean, hopefully to be proactive, but also reactive pretty quickly and really lean into things like education, training, parent involvement, so that we can avoid getting them to a place where they've got charges. Once a kid has charges, it really limits some opportunities for them. Like that can be life-changing.
I was just reading an article. It was, I think it was a CNN thing that popped up on my phone about schools that suspend kids. Mm-hmm. So they have a higher prison rate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I had no idea. So if a kid gets suspended, they're more likely to end up in prison. So that's not the answer, is to Absolutely. Keep them out of the school. It's to, you know, help right. them.
I think one of the things we have to keep in mind, you know, when we think about, you know, issues of behavior and things like that, that there is a traditional mindset of just, you know, kick a kid out, suspend them. But we have to remember from a community perspective that when we kick a kid out, they don't just vanish, right? They're yeah. just going back into the community and they're doing nothing productive.
And likely unsupervised.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, what is their home life like to make them start acting out and having these behaviors? So then you kick them out or you suspend them. Now they're just in that house. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. We're far better off taking our resources, keeping those kids at school. We can certainly still do things like in-school suspension, right? Where you're yeah. not with peers, and do some education, do some training, teach kids skills, right? If you're getting into a fight, then maybe you don't have anger management skills, peer conflict mediation skills. If you're vaping in a bathroom, like we need to talk to you about health education and about how you maybe break a cycle of addiction and things like those. And so those are some of the ways that we're taking more of that ownership on in the school district so that it isn't all the burden of the court system or the police department as well.
Mm-hmm. I know during the Leadership North Iowa that we did together, you had mentioned something about like mental like help, you know, mental health awareness or help that you guys are doing at the school. What are you guys doing with that?
So we have pretty, in terms of school districts, we're pretty well resourced. We've got at least one school counselor, two in some buildings. And then we've got school social workers, you know, all of these kinds of resources. But the reality is that there is a much greater need than our community can meet. You know, if we've got a student who needs to get into mental health counseling, there's often a very long waiting list. We've got great providers. We've got great agencies who always work with us. They'll come into school and provide those services, but we just don't have enough people to do it. And I think, you know, we do recognize that when we're thinking about things like school shootings, or we're thinking about explosive behaviors, if we're thinking about long-term employability, that at the root of that often is mental health issues, whether those are in families, whether they're in kids. And so we want to be a part of that solution. We're aligning our resources to be able to do that, but it's just not enough right now.
I feel like that's across the United States.
Yeah.
So kind of diving into getting through COVID, and I think a lot of these mm-hmm. mental health issues are kind of COVID related, you know, mm-hmm. not necessarily from getting COVID, but from the experience of being so secluded for a year, mm-hmm. online school for a year, you know, just having everything shut down. Mm-hmm. How do you see things progressing going forward? Like kind of this, I know COVID's just probably not going to go away, right? But just progressing through that, because this was the first normal school year, I think, because you guys—
3 years.
Yeah, like you guys weren't wearing masks. You know, right. It was like back to being able to at least see people smile and stuff.
Right.
So going forward, how does that kind of play out in your guys' eyes?
Yeah, so I think, you know, my observation being in the district I was in before and being in this district now is that— What COVID did was amplify whatever was already there. You know, there were some families where they had really great relationships and were really well resourced, and those families thrived, you know, in spite of everything that was happening around us. But when we had families where there was already struggle, there were already conflicts in the family, that those things were really amplified as well. So we saw kids and we saw adults spending more time in conflict and more time in uncertainty and not even having the opportunities to get a break from that. So definitely, you know, when we brought kids back this fall, we were naive, absolutely believed, yay, we're coming back to school.
Everything's great. It's
life
normal.
Is going to be normal. And it absolutely was not. We definitely saw that our kids lost some stamina. You know, part of what you learn going through school is that sometimes you have to do some things that aren't your favorite thing to do, but it's kind of a life skill, right? I do the hard thing in order to delay gratification to get this other thing that is valuable for me. And kids really lost stamina for that. I think our teachers did too. So we also saw kids, you know, would just like walk away. They would avoid coming in. So I think we saw some like level of social anxiety too. Like, I don't really know how to come back and re-engage when I haven't for a long time. And then the other thing that I think may be a little unique in our situation, in our upper grades, we lost kids to work. There, you know, we all know that there's a workforce crisis in North Iowa. Mm-hmm. And when kids weren't in school and our employers were paying good money and willing to recruit, and kids got good jobs. And many of them are supporting themselves or contributing to their families. And when you're 17 years old and you're making $21 an hour, like, feels pretty good, you know, and I try to talk to kids and say, you know, what feels like a lot of money at 17 won't feel like a lot of money at 40.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't, you know, they don't have the ability to think that in that way. So we had a hard time getting kids literally to come back to school and graduate. Our graduation rate really suffered.
That's something I would have never even thought of, you
like
know,
the work.
Cause you know, I graduated 6 months early, or I'm sorry, not 6 months, but like a semester early from high school.
You're so smart.
No, it was cause I took driver's ed in the summer, and driver's ed was a high school credit back then. I don't think it is anymore.
Yeah. It still is. Oh, it still elective. Is.
Yeah. So I took driver's ed and that put me the credit, and my counselor said, hey, you can graduate early if you'd like. And I was like, heck yeah. And I went and hit the workforce, you know, and
absolutely.
Hindsight, I would definitely stay in school, you know, looking back.
Well, you think about it and you're like, oh, I hate school. But then once you're out and you're an adult and you have real life things coming at you, you're like, I wish I was in school.
Can't somebody just tell me what to do and I just do a little bit of work
exactly.
and then just go on with my day?
Yeah. And I'm not at all opposed to moving kids quickly into the workforce. What, you know, what we were hearing from some of the employers though, was, you know, if the student had a high school diploma, then he or she has the opportunity to advance into a supervisor role. But without that diploma, like, you're going to be working on the line for the rest of your life, you know? And so just helping them see that just this little extra step pays you into the future.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about the alternative high school? Because that is like a gem of a program in Mason City.
It is.
So tell us about that.
Absolutely. So Mason City Alternative School is phenomenal. It's one of my favorite places to go and one of my favorite places to hang out at. So we serve about 100 kids there, and we have a really long waiting list. It is a place where students can go if they're behind on credits and they need an alternative path to graduation. I think one of the really unique things about Mason City Alternative School that is not true in a lot of other districts is that kids who go through our alternative school still get a Mason City High School diploma. There is nothing different about the diploma that they receive. And there's nothing different about the work that they've accomplished. They just have some more flexibility in the way that they get the work done. And they also have a lot more support. You know, a lot of it is small groups, teachers who really, really connect well with kids and with each other, who understand that students are more than students. You know, we care about their learning, but we really care about them as people and invest in them. I had the opportunity to go to the graduation ceremony for the alternative school this year. And I'm not an emotional person. I am not a crier. I was sitting next to one of our school board members who is a crier. And like, I started crying before she did. And I was like, Katie, what is this? But it just really is a place that is, you know, I think a lot of people see it as a last resort, but in a lot of ways, like, I want that for all of our kids. And I want our entire school system to be like that, a place where you can walk in wherever you are, whoever you are, be met right there and absolutely have a viable path forward.
Moving on to my alma mater. So I'm a 1990 graduate of Mesa City High School. Cass, where did you graduate from?
Central Springs. So it would have been Manly.
Okay. So my wife, Brooke, also graduated. And mm-hmm. Brooke graduated with about 42. I think I graduated with 400-ish kids. Mm-hmm. And we had two different experiences in our high school. I'm going to talk about some of the positives that I had from going to a bigger school. You had kind of touched on diversity. Yeah. That was one of the big things is everybody could find a fit. With 400 kids, you're going to find friends. I mean, it's almost impossible not to. The other thing too, is Cass, you were of the popular one in your school.
Oh, you think so?
You know, where we didn't really have that much, you know, in high school. And one thing that I've noticed, so my sons will be a senior this year. They are much more inclusive than they were back when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. You can just see it walking down the halls. Like I've talked to my son extensively about this and he's like, no, people just don't care. You can wear what you want. You can dress how you want. Yeah. Nobody makes fun of people anymore, which is awesome. So, we have people coming into town and have the opportunity to potentially open enroll, as far as what we can tell them about our Mason City program, why not necessarily it's better, but why they should really consider Mason City schools.
Yeah. I will say that I think some of that like inclusivity that you talked about is a little bit unique to Mason City. So I spent the last 11 years in a suburban district, pretty similar in size, slightly smaller, but not the same thing. And I would even say being a resident of a suburban community, I didn't experience the same thing even living in the community. Like there was a lot of interest in what car you drive and, you know, all of those things. And I have absolutely not experienced that here living in Mason City. So in some ways, I think it is kind of a community thing. Like this is a really kind of laid back, accepting, open-minded community. And I think that shows up in the culture in our district as well. You know, when we think about pros and cons of small school, big school, public school, private school, I never get into a debate with parents about the choice that they're making for their own kids because I get it, right? You're going to do what's right for your kids and that is your job. But at the same time, I want to make sure that people do understand that there are amazing things that we can offer in a larger district that may not be available in smaller districts. I mentioned some of our unique programming. Like if you've got a student who has needs in terms of, you know, disabilities, in terms of supports that they need, we have those available here. And quite often we're taking those kids from other districts because they don't have those resources. I also think about, you know, what Cassie, we had a conversation about sports, right? Yeah. Oh my God, is my kid going to get cut from the baseball team? You know, if you want to be involved in athletics here, you're going to be on the team, right? You are going to be involved. And I don't know if you've driven by the high school lately, but there happens to be what I would call the most amazing athletic facility in a high school in Iowa that's being constructed there. And we're not just making it the facility. We're really investing in athlete development. And not just for our athletes. So including a whole new PE option that's available to any student that is about physical performance and about really understanding what it's like and what it means to develop physically. And we're able to provide a level of coaching and a level of athlete development that smaller districts can't. At the same time, you know, we have great, this community is amazing in terms of saying yes to anything that we ask. And even when we don't ask, people come to us and offer things. So we now have a senior year option for our students where they can enroll in NIAC classes that meet all of our high school requirements, and they can finish a year at Mason City High School with a year of NIAC completed at the same time, right? So that saves money for families. It also really helps our kids. Like there's no better college prep than being in a college class with the support of your high school teachers at the same time. At the same time, we're really, really investing in career pathways. I think we're really close to getting our first two apprentices hired in the construction trades industry. where students will be able to work their senior year, and we can make their schedules really flexible because we have things like Virtual Academy, because we have, you know, all of these flexible options, and they're going to be able to work a year in high school, work a year after high school, and have a nationally recognized credential that didn't cost them anything. So, you know, we are able to pull together some resources that other districts can't. In terms of class size, like our class sizes are really competitive, honestly. You probably read in the news that we made some pretty significant staff reductions this year. Before those staff reductions, we were in class sizes of like 14 to 17, is amazing, but we can't afford it. So we are going to be more in line with most school districts, you know, at our younger grades in the low 20s and in our upper grades in the mid to upper 20s. But you don't see overcrowded classrooms. We have phenomenal facilities. We have amazing teachers. I would put our teachers up against any of them. If you choose to teach in Mason City, like, you're here for a reason, because there are easier jobs to do, quite frankly. And if you're willing to drive 20 minutes, you can teach in a lot of other places.
One of the questions we had from the public is, and I think we kind of touched on this a little bit, that parents have a concern of potential behavioral issues in schools nowadays. And like, what does Mason City do to combat that?
Yeah, we talked probably quite a bit, you know, about some of the same things I'll say here. Number one, you know, when I think about what we're doing well and what we need to work on, like, this is something I would agree. We need to work on it. And it's probably more of an issue in our middle grades or our upper grades. Like, it's no secret that we've got some things going on that we need to get under control. I'm excited that we've got two new principals at Lincoln Intermediate. Probably a lot of people in the community know Dan Arges. He's been at Roosevelt for a long time, and he is like rock solid. And I'm really excited to see him take over at Lincoln. And then the new principal that we're bringing in there is a really dynamic guy who's been teaching in the Des Moines public system for quite a while. So, we're making some changes in leadership that are going to make some changes in culture that definitely need to happen. And like I said, we're working on kind of root cause stuff, which is, how do we provide support to families so that we make sure that kids are coming to us in a better place than they are sometimes. And we're working on some mental health things, some skill. I firmly believe that kids don't just wake up in the morning and make a decision that they're just going to blow up somebody's day. You know, they do better when they have the skills to do better. And our job is to figure out what skills are lacking and to teach those skills to kids and to like love them and accept them while they learn those skills. At the same time, minimizing the disruption. Our kids tell us it is disruptive when we have a student in our class who blows up. Mm-hmm. It is, and it's scary. So making sure that our adults know what to do, that our kids trust that our adults know what to do, and that we are, you know, holding kids and families accountable for their part of some of the behavior issues, and that we're teaching skills along the way as well.
One of the things that many listeners, and Cass, I don't know if you know this, but there's a lot of displaced kids that don't necessarily have a real home Mason City, which is which is super sad.
When, like, the last school shooting happened, I had posted publicly that I think there needs to be a huge revamp in our mental health care, like just the system in general. Like, it's so expensive to go to like therapy or something too, you know what I mean? And I feel like you said, there can be a wait list on a lot of those places too. And I just feel like there's not a lot of places to take your kids if you're looking for like outside help too, because like, you're lost in what to do now. There's like nowhere to take them. There's nowhere, you know what I mean? It's like, there needs to be a revamp done. And I think it goes further than the school. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure, sure.
Sure. Yeah, we have a part in it. And the reality is that there are enough kids and adults that are in crisis that unless you're in crisis, like, you may not have access because the level of crisis is so intense. And, you know, our real work and the really long, sustainable work happens before we're in crisis. Mm-hmm. And we're at a place right now where we're just barely managing the people who are in crisis. Yeah. And, you know, I would agree, we have kids who are experiencing home situations that probably none of us can even fathom.
Yeah, it's awful.
You know, their meals come from school, their clothes come from school, their stability comes from school. That's one of those things where, you know, sometimes people get a little worked up about like winter closing decisions, you know, like at the end of the day, we've got kids who are counting on us to be open and are counting on us to come and pick them up so that they can eat and be warm and be taken care of for a little while. And that's not to criticize families. I do believe that people are doing the very best that they can and the best that they know how to do.
So another question from the public. It seems like Mason City Schools have been focused on reading.
Yeah.
And things like science and social studies have been going away. Can you kind of touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, it doesn't just seem like it. It's true. So I'll own that. So the reason, and this is at the early grades. So the reason that this last year we were so intently focused on early reading is because it's a critical gatekeeper to everything else. And just like, you know, you shared that kids who are suspended are more likely to end up in prison. Kids who aren't reading on grade level by the end of third grade are 4 times more likely to drop out of high school. It is just that important Wow. that you learn to read. And all of that learning happens in kindergarten through second grade, where you learn letter names and letter sounds and how to put words together. And if you don't learn that, you think about it, you lose access to everything that happens after that because so much of it is written. So our kids who were in third grade this last year haven't experienced even a single year of school that wasn't disrupted. So we saw, kids who really were not where we need them to be. And we have this really critical window to try to get those skills in place so that we can move forward. So we did this year, we really, expanded what we were doing with early reading instruction at the expense of all kinds of other things. The good news is that we saw dramatic gains. We saw like a 26% improvement in our standardized test scores. And that means, number one, that it's working. And it means, number two, that we can kind of dial back and go back to a little bit more of what we've been doing in the past. So we will have time in our year next year for some social studies instruction and some science instruction. But we definitely did take a break from it this year, and it was on purpose.
Super interesting. It's kind of like I was thinking like filling up a big jug of water. Everybody was like quickly shoving water in there, and now it's at a level where it's good. So you can settle down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Along with this, with this kind of a two-part question, this individual was wondering if school feels too much like a boot camp and you're trying to just like maximize. And whether or not the kids are still having fun and, you know, enjoying.
One thing I want to say on that too, is I've seen this meme going around on Facebook that in other countries, they have more recess breaks and stuff than the United States does. And their testing and all of that is so much further ahead of our country. Like, what are your thoughts on that as a whole?
I experience the same kind of angst sometimes when I walk into our classrooms. Kids do need to be kids, and they don't have the stamina to just like be in drill all day long. Our kids have what is probably a pretty comparable amount of recess to other districts. In fact, it was in a superintendent class the last 2 days, and we were all like surveying each other about how much recess time everybody has, because I do think it's a concern that a lot of people have. The difficulty is that time is just really, really constrained. So, I think my message to teachers has always been like, you need to do what you need to do to ensure that these are still joyful places, right? Joyful places for kids to be and joyful places for our adults to be, because we're asking our adults to do really hard work. And education's kind of a thankless job right now in some ways. And it's hard. And so we do have to find joy, you know? So it's okay to like take a moment from the SIPS group, which is a reading intervention, and like do some dancing, some singing, like get up and move, color some pages, like do what you need to do based on what you know about your class and their needs. Because at the end of the day, like our kids are going to be fine. Like we're going to take care of them, but we can't burn them out. We can't. Mm-hmm.
So this is the weirdest thing. I was dropping my daughter off last year. She was a freshman, but I think I was dropping her off to the FEMA room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching these kids come out from John Adams Middle School, and they're wearing like political shirts and political hats and stuff at like 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah.
So one of the questions from the public is, the world is more sensitive now. How do you guys deal with kids' views on things now. Like, I mean, you have to encourage them because they're passionate about things. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely something that wasn't around when I was going to school. I could have cared less about politics when I was in school.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, because we're public schools, like our position is always like all views are welcome, all views are accepted. And sometimes that even makes us take kind of a closed position. I mean, I'll give a really extreme example, like as a public institution, if we want to allow the Girl Scouts to have a meeting, an informational meeting, and recruit members in our cafeteria after school, the law requires that we also allow like the skinhead Nazi biker gang to have an informational meeting in our cafeteria and recruit members, because we have to, by law, we have to be neutral. And so sometimes we just say, you know, nobody's having an informational meeting. You can post that at Pizza Ranch, but, you know, where they can say yes or no. So that is our charge as a public school district, is to not take a position. At the same time, trying to teach kids the skill of how do you take an informed position. That's one of the ways I was kind of reading through some of the questions that were submitted ahead of time from the public. And that's one of the ways education, I think, really has evolved in the 23 years that I've been an educator, we've shifted much more to questions than answers. We've shifted much more to teaching kids the skill of making a claim and finding evidence to support it, or reading the evidence and making your claim based on whatever evidence it is, and not judging, you know, the position, but judging the quality of the argument. And we see that as a shift in science instruction and in social studies instruction as well. Like, here, we're going to present you with all of this, and now you make sense of it in a way that is logical and reasonable, and worthy of being shared. You know, I think sometimes had my generation learned some of those things, we might not be in some of the places we are right now.
That's what I was just thinking. I was like, maybe all of us adults should go with that too. Not just look on a link on Facebook and be like, oh, no.
It must be true. Yeah.
Right.
You need to cite 3 sources when you give your opinion, please.
Yes. Scholarly sources.
We did used to have to do that. Yeah. Okay, so one thing I do want to ask, because I did get 3 people to ask this question, mm-hmm. was, are children being taught how to read and write in cursive?
Oh, yeah, this is funny. Okay, so in the reason, because I went through and I highlighted, here's what I think everybody really wants to know.
Yeah.
And I'll be really honest, I avoided that one because I'm not sure I know the actual answer, because I'm new here. I can tell you my viewpoint on it, which is pretty influential in the district. So I personally feel like kids should learn to write letters in cursive. It needs to be contained in terms of how much time it takes. And then I do think that kids should learn how to read cursive, right? And there are all kinds of ways that we can do that, by having teachers write on the board in cursive, by presenting them with texts that are in cursive. I'm just not sure that it merits, you know, the 25 minutes a day that we probably spent learning it in third grade.
I remember being like, you had to write so many times in a row in cursive. And it was a lot.
Yeah. But like, I have 4 kids and one of them didn't learn how to write in cursive. And I'm not sure how that happened. The other 3 did, and they all went to the same school. But she literally didn't know how to sign her name.
Oh my God.
And I had to teach her how to sign her name. So like, that matters. And, you know, we have to keep it pretty contained. I mean, and probably I spent most of my 7th grade year, like, learning how to write in a different kind of handwriting that was, you know, not cursive or manuscript either. So kids have personality anyway. But I do think it's a skill. Like, we have to learn how to sign our names.
Yeah.
We probably need to be able to read, like, some basic stuff, too.
When you get a letter from grandma and it's still in cursive.
Right. Yeah. I remember I used to write to my great grandma every month, and she would write it back. It'd be so tiny. You know, you're trying to read the letters.
So another question from the public is, what in the curriculum is most important to the kids? So we know up to 3rd grade reading. Let's talk about maybe like John Adams or high school. What is like really important?
Yeah, I'm probably going to go kind of high level here, but I can bring it down to some specifics as well. The Gallup company did a survey. It's probably been a study, it wasn't just a survey, probably like 15 years ago now, where they were trying to answer the question, like, what are the causal factors in a K-12 experience that lead to success in adult life? And in order to do that, they had to, of course, define what does it mean to experience success in adult life. And they brought it down to two factors. Number one, gainful employment. And it's just kind of like you make enough money, right? There's a point where, you know, doesn't matter, but you have enough. And then the other one was a sense of efficacy, like the idea that my existence in the world, my existence in this place matters. So then they went back and they said, okay, so what things cause that to happen? And, you know, we look at traditional things like academic achievement, and academic achievement matters, but it had like a 30% impact on that. What had the greatest impact was a combination of hope and engagement. And the definition of hope is I have a vision of myself in the future and I believe that it's attainable. And then the definition of engagement was, and I believe the things that I'm doing right now and today can lead me there, right? That they are connected to it and they matter. And I think often when we think about our secondary school experiences, you know, you see the memes like, why are we teaching algebra? When did I ever have to use algebra, right? That there is a lack of that engagement piece of it. And so I think one of the most important things we're doing right now is making a much closer and clear connection to how what I'm doing right now connects to what my future dreams are. The other thing that I think matters in this community as much as any other is that we have a lot of kids who don't have that vision of their future self, right? They don't know anyone who is gainfully employed and experiences a sense of efficacy, right? Or on the other end of it, you know, maybe they've come from homes where they haven't experienced a lot of struggle or hardship, right? And so they also think, I'm just kind of checking the boxes. I have a friend who's an Army recruiter, and he's like, my best pool are like the kids who went to high school and did really well, and they went to college and did really well because that's what you're supposed to do. And now they have no idea what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. That there's no sense of greater connectedness to what I'm doing day in and day out. So, you know, we're starting to think about how do I close the gap from where I am today and to where I want to be in the future. And when I think about like our economy and our region here in North Iowa, that's critical here. You know, how do we ensure that the students that we're graduating, first of all, like see a vision for their future self here in North Iowa, and that they stay here in North Iowa, and that the people who are here are gainfully employed and experience a sense of efficacy in this community. Like it matters to all of us. So when I think about like our career academies and our career pathways, our connections with employers, like all of those things I would argue are the most important thing that we're doing for our students right now.
I also think how you said how they can, you know, do the NIAID classes and stuff like that. That was huge for me in high school. Mm-hmm. They offered a program similar to that at Manly, and I almost had an AA degree when I graduated.
Awesome.
So, I mean, it was, you know, then you get into college, and I think that's a huge transition mm-hmm. of trying to figure out, are these classes that I'm doing really what I want to do? You know what I mean? And that kind of takes a lot less pressure off of that too.
Absolutely.
So I think we've touched on a lot of the questions from the public. So putting some pressure on you. So you just finished your first year. So yeah. you got your second year coming up. What are some of your big goals for the 2022, 2023?
Yeah, I just had my first opportunity to do a little bit of strategic planning with the board. So I brought my goals with me. We really have five goals that we're shooting for right now. One of them is about building a positive image of Mason City School District in the North Iowa community. We want this to be the district of choice. We want our school district to be a reason that people choose to live here and choose to stay here. And when we think about what that means, you know, there are some misperceptions, I think, about what's happening in our schools, but there are also some realities that we have to get honest about and that we need to do better with as well. Our second goal is to make the Mason City School District the premier place to work in education in North Iowa. We have to have the most amazing teachers here. We have to have the most amazing principals, leaders, and support staff here because this is hard work. So, you know, we think about what that looks like, but we want to make sure that our teachers and our employees feel seen, they feel valued, they feel heard, that they have the resources that they need to do their job really well, because we can't do what we need to do for kids unless we've got the best people working in our district. Our next one is to ensure that all of our students know that the adults in their school care about them. when we kind of look at some of our data, some of our survey results, the conversations that we had with parents, with students, with community members, and then get down to some root cause analysis, really, I think it comes down to relationships, right? Do we have high quality relationships with our kids and with our students? When I was first started teaching, I was taught a very simple formula that is rules plus relationship equals good classroom management. And then the reverses of those, you know, like a rules minus a relationship causes rebellion and disrespect, and relationship minus rules creates chaos. And so for us, we've got to make sure we've got that balance of like sort of like strong back, soft front in place. So we've got some goals around that as well. And then we've got reading and math goals. We continue to work on that, making sure that all of our students can read by the end of third grade, because it is such a high-powered gatekeeper. And then we've got a math goal. Right now, we nationally, we saw that the biggest impact in terms of student achievement from COVID was math. Districts, students really suffered in terms of their learning in math, partly because it's so sequential, and if you get spaced too far from it, like you can't connect, you know, it's just, it builds on itself so much. Yeah. But for us, actually, we saw great gains in K-5, but we're really seeing some scary things happening right now in 6, 7, 8, 9. And so we need to make sure that we're creating programs and services where we can meet those kids, close those gaps, and make sure that they're still graduating with math skills that prepare them for options after high school.
Us 40-year-olds are all wondering why the math seems so much harder now than it did when we were kids. Division.
Yeah, and I was just multiple. Thinking, like when you said, you know, when am I ever going to use this in the real world? I actually use math all the time real estate, like calculating how many acres there are and your closing statements and all this stuff. It's actually, I'm like, dang, I should have focused a little bit more.
So I would agree, math got harder. That is true. Like we actually introduce algebra in kindergarten, like algebraic thinking, the idea that there is a balance on either side of an equation. And if you move one thing, it affects the other side. And then there's been a whole shift in the way math is taught to introduce more. So if you're naturally good at math, you do a lot of mental math and you think about math in some pretty specific ways. And if you're not naturally good at math, you probably just like memorized steps. And the whole shift now is to make sure that everybody knows those patterns and it becomes good at what essentially is like mental math and thinking about math. And that's been a hard shift for parents, like a really hard shift for parents. Mm-hmm. But the good news, like when we interviewed our young kids and we asked them, what do you love about school? Almost unanimously, they said, we love math. And it was like, what?
What's
like,
wrong with
it
you?
Ranked up there with recess and lunch and chicken nuggets. And it was like, what? They love the way that we teach math. And our kids are absolutely like killing it in math achievement in the early grades too. So
one thing that we have talked about before is kind of population and how Mason City has decreased in population over years, which obviously creates a problem for schools. What are ways you think that we can encourage growth?
Yeah, so I think about that in two ways, right? There's sort of the immediate things that you do now, and then there's like the generational view, right? How do you plant those long-term seeds? And one of the ways that I think about planting those long-term seeds and that generational view is a lot of workforce connectedness, right? When I talk to people in the Economic Development Council, it's like, we have industry who want to come here. Like, we are perfectly situated. Like, there is no better physical location to be, but we can't promise a workforce, right?
Yeah.
So for us, it's like when I think about the public school district, like we're a major gatekeeper in the future workforce, right? So in what ways can we align with the economy of North Iowa and think about manufacturing and construction and healthcare and make sure that our students are building those, that first of all, that they understand the opportunities that are there and that they're starting to build relationships with some really amazing employers who are here that make them choose to stay here. Like, we don't want to export our kids. We want to keep them here. We want them to raise a family here. We want them to be a workforce here. And then when we think about some of our more immediate things, like honestly, some of the goals I just talked about, like we've got some image problems and some of that, like we're our own worst enemy in some ways. And so we've got some real things to change and we've got some PR things to change. And parents have a lot of choices, just like our teachers do. If you're willing to drive your kid about 20 minutes, you have a lot of options. And so we can't fake it. like we really have to be the school that's worth choosing here.
In saying that, what do you think is Mason City's biggest challenge as far as the school district?
So certainly a challenge here in the Mason City School District, but it's a challenge, I think, in public education everywhere. And like I said earlier, I always support a parent's right to make the choice that they think is best for their child. But what one of the challenges we face is helping like the whole community and the whole of society to recognize that public education is a public good. It is a rare industry where the quality of services that somebody else's kid gets like directly impact you. Like your life benefits from or suffers from the quality of education that other people's kids get. And so regardless of the choice that anybody makes individually or whether or not they have kids in school, like we all need to understand that we all benefit or suffer from how well our public school system is doing here. And so I try to get people to avoid that sort of contentious or us versus them mentality when we think about education.
I think out of all of our podcasts that we've done, so Cass and I have been doing this for 2 years, this one is really important. If you are a parent out there listening, have your kids listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. I think it would be really, really beneficial. We're in road trip season anyway, so what else do you have to do to sit yeah. in a car for a couple hours? But yeah, I would encourage your kids to listen to this podcast. I know my kids are going to listen to it.
So in saying that, how can like parents get involved? Do you know what I mean? In kids yeah. and like just the community in general, like what do you need from the community? Or are there ways, like if children are saying things to their parents of concern or something like that, like what are ways that they can get involved then too?
So always, always, if you've got parents in, or if you've got children in school, like reach out to the building principal. That's your first line. I'm super accessible too. Like my email is easy to find. My phone number is easy to find. I'm happy to have a conversation with anybody. And at the same time, like we do public forums and we seek public input. We did a parent focus group and we had 4 parents show up.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
When was that? When did you do that?
It was about 3 weeks ago. We invited about 80. And I know we didn't invite everybody, but we had 4 who show up. So please, like when there are opportunities to get involved in a conversation, like we want to know, we want to understand what you're experiencing. We want to understand what's working and what's not, mm-hmm. because we serve our community. This is our job. We are a community school district. So any opportunity you have to get involved, don't hold back. Tell us the truth. We want to know the truth because we're always getting better.
Well, Bridget, thanks so much for taking your time. We really welcome to Mason City.
Thank you.
Hope you stay here for a long time. Yeah. I love your passion and just your drive and you really want this to be a positive impact. And I think you're doing it. So thank you so much for all your work.
That's a great place to be.